Welcome to Stop the Presses. Your host, Mark Anderson, coming to you live. Yes, live today, the 28th of June, 2023. And we're video simulcasting via the services of Ron Avery, my co-commentator. And that goes to livestream.com/Ron Avery, A-V-E-R-Y, /Stop the Presses. One big blur of letters. So you can see us, not just hear us. If you want to subject yourself to that, Ron and I are okay, but we wouldn't join any club that would have us as members, as they say. In the most self-deprecating fashion possible. Anyway, many reflections. Ron and I talk more off the air than we do on the air.
Yes, we do.
That usually results in some rather fruitful discussions, and some of it can be overlapping with what we've talked to in recent times. You can't help but repeat yourself once in a while. Sometimes when you talk about the powers that be, you think you're driving in a straight line and you're driving in a circle. Next thing you know, you entered a town that you already went through, metaphorically speaking. But anyway, much has happened since I've been live on this show. Ron's been covering for me on some of the Wednesdays to keep Stop the Presses mostly live and not too many rebroadcasts, and I want to thank Ron for that. On June 10 and 11, I had the pleasure and honor of meeting none other than Sheriff Joe Michael Arpaio, America's toughest sheriff, first in Phoenix at the Italian American Club on June 10th, where they observed his 91st birthday. And then on June 11th, the following day on a Sunday, at his office in Fountain Hills, Arizona, a little bit east of Phoenix. Both were very enjoyable days. I want to thank Joe for being a great host, plus his assistant Kevin and another assistant Carlo that have been especially helpful in the whole situation. I went there to interview him on that Sunday, and Saturday was the celebration, so that was more of a loose time, just kind of have a good time and take a few photos, do a little basic news coverage, but really, really just kind of kick back. So most of the work was on that Sunday. And in this first segment, I'll show some images from my coverage of that event for the video simulcast part of this show. And here is none other than Joe himself. I took this picture, of course, at his desk. Check it out, Ron. Is that not an awesome desk or what? And I'm not hearing Ron for some reason. Anyway, we might be getting some feedback on Ron's end. That's just a quick technical note.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, the picture I'm showing is at Joe at his awesome desk, and it says on the front, describing it for audio-only listeners, there's a front placard on the front center part of the desk that looks kind of like the presidential seal, but instead it says the Office of Sheriff Joe Arpaio. Then he's got the nameplate on the actual desktop on the front in the middle. It says Sheriff Joe Arpaio, parentheses, America's toughest sheriff. And he's sitting, of course, in a very fine leather chair. There's all sorts of ball caps and accolades and plaques and awards just strewn throughout the wall. Up above, if he turns around in his desk, he's at his trusty electric typewriter. He doesn't use a computer much, if at all. And he learned to type way back in high school. And that's what kept him off the front lines during the Korean War. He had a desk job during the Korean War when he was in the Army, and his typing skills from high school were part of the reason that he got that desk job, as he explained it to me, and as is explained in his autobiography called Sheriff Joe Arpaio, An American Legend, in the sheriff's own words with David Thomas Roberts. And the foreword was written by the Michigan rock guitarist Ted Nugent. We're getting a little bit of weird line noise once in a while, just mentioning it. At least that's what I'm hearing. Anyway, moving on, I have other photos. And here is me shaking Joe's hand in another part of his office. And Ron, I can tell you that this is just about the coolest office that anyone would ever want to have. The number of accolades and certificates and news clips. There's a picture of him above the picture of Joe and I. There's a picture of Joe with Donald Trump. If you look down lower between Joe standing to the left and me standing to the right, and we're shaking hands in this photo, you see a picture of Joe meeting George W. Bush, George the Dimmer, some of us call him. But all that aside, it was great meeting Joe. Ron, you might want to comment on this image, describing it for audio listeners. This is the sign that was from his Tent City Jail, his infamous Tent City Jail, which really was a very good kind of jail to have, very economical, saved the taxpayers tens of millions of dollars. And he announced the Tent City Jail concept early in his Maricopa County, Arizona sheriff's career, right around 1993-94, when he just started as sheriff there. And he was sheriff there till latter 2016, some 24 years. And it says here, vacancy, today you have hard labor, haircuts, bologna sandwiches, 35-cent meals, educational TV, pink underwear, a high of 122 degrees. But there's more to that story. And drug testing, but no smoking, no coffee, no movies, and no girly magazines. If you don't want to do the time, don't do the crime. A big wooden sign, kind of vertically oriented with black print on it. Looks like it's made of pine. And it says vacancy at the Tent City Jail, vacancy. So that's a rather humorous thing that reflects the realities of his Tent City Jail. He didn't want to spend tens of millions of dollars to build more brick and mortar jails. So he got surplus heavy duty tents through his military connections and was able to create a system which was designed for those who were already convicted. These were not holding cells, generally speaking, for those that hadn't gone to trial yet. They were jails, Tent City jails, for those who were already convicted. That included illegal aliens, and most of those illegal aliens, except for the ones that were guilty of crimes here, most of them were deported. And so, Ron, are you out there? I don't know if you have any quick comments.
No, I'm not out there. I keep hearing, somebody keeps... Well, Mike says I'm getting feedback, all kinds of, I don't know where it's coming from. I don't know what the deal is. I'll try another setting. Just go ahead and talk while I'll try another setting.
Well, when you're talking, you sound fine. There's just a little bit of line noise or something going on, but when you talk, you sound fine. Just a quick footnote. Anyway, here's another quick one. Just recounting my experiences there before we get into some other miscellaneous matters. There is a new racing horse, an apparent thoroughbred, named Sheriff Joe, named after the lawman. And here's a picture of Sheriff Joe, the racehorse. And on that picture in the upper left corner, there's a picture of Sheriff Joe, the human being. And it says there, a very special birthday with to Sheriff Joe, happy birthday. And so Joe learned at his birthday party that I was at June 10th that this racehorse was named after him. And the owner, a fella named Mark, I understand he's a wealthier guy, he brought this surprise announcement to Joe at the Italian American Club. And he recounted how he checked the registry. There's a registry for those that go through the very expensive and time and money consuming process of raising a racehorse, and he wanted to name it Sheriff Joe. So Mark checked the registry, found out that the name was not taken, and sure enough, there's a racehorse named Sheriff Joe. And here's the kicker: he's said to be a direct descendant of perhaps the greatest racehorse of all time, Secretariat. So quite cool. an interesting thing there. I don't know that we have, we have another picture. This is Joe talking to typical fans, indulging being mobbed by one fan and one friend right after another. Many people he didn't know, many that he did, and friends of friends, not just immediate friends. And the guy to Joe's rear, the guy behind him, is a singer. I believe his name is Al Ritano, and he sang a song during the birthday party at the club here, and Joe joined in and sang a little bit, kind of a slightly Frank Sinatra, Perry Como style, you might say, which was also a lot of fun. and this is a British gentleman. His last name is Brandt, B-R-A-N-T. I'm forgetting his first name right now, Mr. Brandt. He's originally from Plymouth, England. And he's holding up a pink outfit, which includes the legendary pink underwear. And he's standing at the Italian American Club's podium. And there's Joe standing to his right at the podium itself while Mr. Brandt steps out front. And this is about the pink underwear that Joe made the inmates wear at the Tent City jails, partially because the laundered, clean, white underwear, the inmates would take too many pair at once, and they'd run out of supplies too quickly. So when Joe dyed them pink, or bought pink underwear, whichever happened, I'm not sure if he dyed them, then because they were pink, the mostly male inmates wouldn't want any more than they would have to have. They certainly wouldn't take more pair than they needed. So it was a way to control the laundry, but it was also a way to kind of send the message that if you're Joe's prisoner, he's going to make things a little bit unpleasant for you. But at the same time, according to Sheriff Joe's autobiography that I mentioned, he made sure actually that there was movie nights and that there was no curfew. There was, despite the hot weather, an air-conditioned building that the inmates could enter at times. There was obviously sufficient food and water. No one was mistreated. No one was tortured, contrary to the mass media syndicate. But at the same time, Joe doesn't believe that if you're guilty of the crime, that you should be sent to Shangri-La or some ultra comfortable summer camp. So, you know, this wasn't the Riviera, but it wasn't a torture chamber either. Joe hit it in the middle very skillfully. So that's just a slice. Describing it for the audio listeners, but showing it for those that want to see the video in real time or afterwards when our videos automatically archive, you can see what all this looked like. There's Mark right there in this photo. He has a patch on one eye. He's wearing a black hat with a white brim and a blue sports jacket. He's the wealthy gentleman who either is directly raising the horse named Sheriff Joe or someone's doing it on his behalf. I don't quite understand the total relation. Joe is standing behind him in this photo. And here is happy 91st birthday, a picture of Joe's birthday cake, a very long rectangular cake. It fed everybody. There was some 300 people at the party, and there was still cake left. This is a very large cake, but it's just a large flat sheet cake. It's not a layer cake going up like a pyramid. And it simply says, in pink and black outline frosting on a white cake, it says, happy 91st birthday. And it has on the left and right side of those words, it has images of the pink underwear, the infamous pink underwear. So a rather humorous twist to the party. And I think that's sufficient to describe the party itself and meeting Joe on June 10th. And meeting him in his office on June 11th. I showed some of those office photos already. And we had about a four-hour interview about various aspects of his career. And what we can get into now is we'll come out of share screen. And we should be normal now, Ron.
Yes.
But coming out of share screen, we got about 4 minutes before the first break. And that made for some good visuals for those that want to check out the video. And I hope my descriptions for audio listeners was sufficient. But what I learned above all, above and beyond the party and the good times, sitting down with Joe in his office on that Sunday, photographing the office, getting to know him a little more personally. I've known him by phone for maybe 6 or 7 years. this book here, plus from talking to him, this is the book I mentioned, Sheriff Joe Arpaio, An American Legend, which he signed and made some very nice comments for me. He said, to Mark, a great journalist who has the courage and integrity to tell it like it is, signed Sheriff Joe Arpaio, which is very nice of him to say, and I appreciate it. By reading this book, Ron, and by meeting him and talking to him, if we had a sheriff like this in virtually every county along the border, all the way from the Pacific Ocean, some 1,900 and some miles to the Gulf of Mexico, Texas comprising roughly 1,100 of those miles, if we had that kind of sheriff along the border, none of this would be happening. None of it. And here's why. He described what he would do. In short, what he would do is, first of all, like he did in Mexico in the 1970s when he worked for the federal DEA, he worked with the Mexican military, units and assets of the American military, in conjunction with the DEA, and they stopped much of the contraband, drugs, the illegal movement of guns, etc., human trafficking, I'm sure, to a degree. He stopped it before it ever reached the United States. And he says you got to do it there. You can't let it get here. Once it gets here, all the attendant problems become very, very evident and much harder to control. Oh, now we got to bus them into the country. Oh, where are we going to detain them? How are we going to process them? Well, you don't have to worry about any of that if they don't make it here. Now, granted, back then you didn't have the large numbers of women and children along with the smugglers and the traffickers. But the other side of the coin, and I know we got a break in about 2 minutes, but the other side of the coin is then you set up tent city jails like Joe had, and those who make it across the border who aren't stopped and deported by the Border Patrol, because the Border Patrol, working with the military, should be doing deportations mostly, those that do get through would be arrested for illegal employment, for human smuggling, by sheriff's departments like the one Joe used to head up, and then they would go to the tent city jails, and unless they were wanted for a crime here and would go to jail or prison for a crime here, they would be deported for the crime of entering the U.S. illegally. And yes, women and children would be tended to, and they would be fed, of course. No one's going to hurt anyone. But so you'd have this multifaceted system. A lot of it wouldn't get here to begin with, but that which did reach here would be detained, tried, imprisoned, or deported. And so in terms of people staying here, seeking asylum, if that were to happen, the numbers would be very low, and they'd be dealt with only on the basis if they actually qualified for real asylum. So by enforcing the law firmly and evenly and objectively, a Sheriff Joe Arpaio in most of the counties along the border practicing these things, and we'll talk about the posse more after the break, if they practice these things, nothing like we're seeing would ever have happened in the first place, Ron.
Yeah. Do you think the federal government would try to stop Joe Arpaio from doing that?
This federal government right now, yes, they would. And we'll talk more after the break. Stay tuned. Yeah.
I'm so excited to have you as part of the Wild Pastures family, and we look forward to bringing you the pasture-raised meats that you and your family will love. Now, we started Wild Pastures because so many of my clients would tell me they just couldn't find high-quality pasture-raised meats, and even when they did, it was so expensive that they couldn't afford to eat it regularly. Now, I'm not talking about the bottom-of-the-barrel healthy meats that have claims like natural or free-range or even cage-free, terms that were actually created by the industrial food industry to make us feel all warm and fuzzy about buying their low-quality products. I'm talking about truly nourishing pasture-raised meats, the kind that you'll never really find in a grocery store. Our farmers are doing things beyond organic. Our beef is 100% grass-fed and grass-finished and raised on pastures free from chemicals and other pesticides. Our chickens are 100% pasture-raised, where they get their natural diet of grass and forage and insects. We will never settle for free range, which is actually one of the most deceptive terms in the chicken industry. In fact, less than 0.1% of the chicken consumed in the United States is truly pasture-raised in the way that ours is. And our pork is 100% pasture-raised as well. So if you care about where your food comes from, then you have definitely made it to the right place. As a Wild Pastures member, you'll be supporting the most highly principled farmers in America and getting the most nutrient-dense, nourishing, and sustainable meats in the world. But I'm confident you'll love being part of our mission at Wild Pastures, and you will really love the delicious, nourishing meats that we're going to deliver straight to your door.
Visit republicbroadcasting.org and click the Wild Pastures banner ad. Secure a shipment today. Beef, poultry, and pork. Raised the way nature intended.
Don't become dependent on the medical system. Get and stay healthy naturally with Extendivite. Metals in the liver cause peroxides to get dumped into the bloodstream. Peroxides do more damage than free radicals to the arteries, and the LDL has no protection from peroxides, causing the LDL to get stuck in the arteries, creating a potential blockage. Extendivite slowly chelates the metals away from the liver so it can dispose of what was meant to be a harmless process, peroxide. Extendivite's seven herbs has a job to strengthen the organs and circulatory highway. Can you afford a heart attack? Extendivite is available in capsule or liquid form for just $69.95 for a 2-month supply. To get started, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Every day we roll from town to town. We see another mom and papa just getting shut down. And it's the same five stores everywhere we go. And it's the same damn music on the radio.
Welcome to the short segment of this show, 28th of June, 2023, pardon me, and your host, Mark Anderson, here for Stop the Presses at RBN. We're a video simulcasting to livestream.com/Ron Avery, A-V-A-R-Y, /Stop the Presses. I just got done in the first segment showing pictures of and reflecting on my visit with Joe Arpaio, first time meeting him in person, June 10th and 11th, on the 10th for his 91st birthday party, and on the 11th at his office in Fountain Hills, Arizona, near Phoenix, to interview him and talk about his career. And we talked also, Ron, and it's mentioned in that autobiographical book that I showed, about the posse that Sheriff Arpaio had. And here's what's interesting. The posse amounted, functionally speaking, to a militia. Joe raised 3,000 members of a posse, 3,000, several hundred of whom were armed. Everyone was screened and vetted very carefully. Everyone had to buy their own firearms if they were allowed to be armed, depending on who they were and what their skills were. And everyone was assigned to different posse functions and different units according to their skills and their knowledge. And they had to buy their, the state, the county did provide their ammunition. Every bullet had to be accounted for. So if I'm a posse member and they gave me 100 bullets and I show up with 95, they're going to want to know where the other five went. So they want to know if that firearm's been discharged in the line of posse duty. But here's the thing. The posse would help patrol the border and would function as Joe described it, as his army. And that army would do everything from rescue lost hikers, rescue mountain climbers, rescue people that had trouble on a body of water. They did search and rescue. They patrolled the border. They apprehended illegal aliens. They helped arrest people who were illegally employed, illegal aliens, or the employers who employed them, the smugglers. They did everything without adding to the cost to the taxpayers. You combine that with the tent city jail system that I mentioned in the first segment, and tens of millions of dollars are being saved to the taxpayers. And at the same time, law enforcement, because of the large number of posse members supplementing several hundred deputies with Joe in command, this amounted to a grassroots, taxpayer-friendly army, aka militia-like thing, that kept Maricopa County at one of the lowest crime rates in history for Arizona, and not a single church or school so-called mass shooting, not a single one happened on Joe's watch. And in fact, he proactively trained some of the posse members to patrol churches proactively, to patrol schools proactively, before someone might get it in their head, whether they're doing it for propaganda purposes or whatever the reason. And we know that these events are very nebulous oftentimes, and we wonder about the reality of them. We know that. But Joe wanted to just make sure that no one would concoct or in any way stage or in any way carry out what would be called a mass shooting. And his proactive events, or proactive strategies rather, he said in his autobiography, were done at a time when reports of these so-called shootings were beginning to ascend, were beginning to go up in number. And so he right away, rather than waiting for something to happen, he proactively patrolled the schools, churches, probably some of the shopping malls, and some of the posse members would even do parking lot duty to make sure somebody didn't get their gift, their Christmas gifts stolen out of their car while they were inside shopping. So that would put the posse at the malls too, where sometimes we hear about these nebulous shootings. See, so the proactive approach, saving the taxpayers' money, having many of the posse members armed, the whole thing taken together with the tent city jails meant cost-effective, very effective law enforcement that put a huge dent in illegal immigration. And the mass media cartel, Ron, led the way in trying to destroy Joe.
Yes. What years was he in office as sheriff there?
1993 till about late 2016.
Wow. Well, he did cover a period of that increase in mass shootings, so-called mass shootings.
Yes, and the thing is Joe commanded respect. He was the commander. He would never carry a gun himself unless he was in uniform. He has a security detail maybe, but not much of one. I'm not sure about that part of his life, but he just had a way, from all his experience dating back to being a Washington, D.C. beat cop, a Las Vegas cop, a federal DEA agent, going up the ladder as a federal agent. He had a way of making it happen. We'll be back after these messages.
Simple smile, such platonic eye. How they drown in incomplete capacity. Strangers thought them old when the fear it calls. How we drown in stylistic audacity. Charge the common ground.
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news, real talk, real people. Because you can handle the truth.
Antelope Hill Publishing is America's leading publisher of dissident books, bringing you a wide variety of new translations and original works on every subject, from the funding behind the transgender movement to firsthand memoirs of World War II previously inaccessible to English-speaking audiences. We publish books that mainstream publishers won't touch, full of information that challenges the political status quo. Whether you count yourself as a political dissident, student of history, connoisseur of philosophy, or enthusiast of exciting and thought-provoking fiction, you owe it to yourself to check out our catalog. With exclusive offerings like the transgender industrial complex, Solzhenitsyn and the right, the open society playbook, opioids for the masses, and many more. There's something for everyone, and new titles are added every month. Check out our catalog today at antelopehillpublishing.com and use code RBN Readers 2023 for 10% off your order. That's RBN Readers 2023 at antelopehillpublishing.com.
Hello, hello, hello from beautiful Colorado. My name is Samuel Jung Kay, and I am currently the lead Shilajit hunter and master herbalist for Colorado Shilajit Company. In this video series, I will be discussing what we believe is the greatest of all adaptogenic superfoods and the single greatest natural healing remedy gifted to us by Mother Earth. I think you too will become as excited by this incredible substance called Shilajit as we were and are after our discovery of this amazing gift right here in beautiful, colorful Colorado. You may already know Shilajit by other names. Shilajit, Momio, Momi, Mami, Mineral Pitch, Asphaltum, and others. Shilajit literally translates to destroyer of weakness and conqueror of mountains. Shilajit has been in use for thousands of years and is considered as the highest valued cure-all of any earthly substance.
Look for the gold mountain and medical symbol logo in banners on republicbroadcasting.org to watch the full video and see more information. Use code GORBN when ordering. That's G-O-R-B-N.
Have you been looking for a trusted long-term storable food company? We have a solution for you. Simply Clean Foods is dedicated to providing the best quality food you can buy next to fresh from a farmer's market. Our line of resealable fruits, vegetables, and meats are suitable for everyday use, and you won't have to worry about throwing away valuable groceries ever again. Our food is completely GMO-free, and our stringent quality controls, plus testing for heavy metals, makes us unique in the storable foods market. Simply Clean Foods' primary focus is to bring clean food to people all around the world and change the way we look at freeze-dried food in our daily cooking. When you purchase from Simply Clean Foods, not only will you be receiving high-quality food, but you will also be supporting veterans in need across the country and those who are affected by natural disasters.
Go to republicbroadcasting.org and click on long-term food storage in the rotating sponsors banners to support RBN.
Simply Clean Foods. Do it today.
Okay, thanks a lot. And welcome to the second half of Stop the Presses. Your host, Mark Anderson, coming to you live today. And I'm joined, as per usual, by Ronald Avery, and he does the video simulcast, livestream.com/Ron Avery, A-V-E-R-Y / Stop the Presses. And we've been talking about my getting to know Joe Arpaio and some of what he's all about in terms of how he has run the Maricopa County, Arizona law enforcement apparatus in a county larger than Rhode Island and in competition with being as large as Connecticut, by the way. Some very big counties in the U.S. West of the Mississippi. There's counties in Texas that are larger than Rhode Island and larger than Connecticut. But anyway, Ron, you and I were talking off the air about the illegal immigration that Joe on both sides of the border has exercised in the recent past and more distant past, has exercised measures that, if instituted today, would go a long way toward preventing the border crisis that we're seeing from ever happening. Most of it would never have happened in the first place, and what little did happen would be easily taken care of. But a quick footnote on that is the mass media cartel, which kind of worked in conjunction with the Obama administration to file charges against Arpaio to make sure he wouldn't get reelected as 2017 came around. Now, some of that, a quick footnote, was because Sheriff Arpaio accepted the challenge of the Tea Party to look into Barack Obama's birth certificate and found with convincing evidence that the birth certificate is fraudulent. Well, it was payback time, so the mass media syndicate working with the Obama administration, remember the media is keeping an eye on big government. Oops, they're actually working with big government. So they pushed Joe out, and a lot of the media articles were saying, oh, Arpaio is lawless. Arpaio, it's just chaos. When in fact, correct me if I'm wrong, lawlessness, and you even see this on the Westerns that you see on TV, all the old Westerns, Wells Fargo days and Bat Masterson and all these old Western shows and some of the movies, lawlessness when there was an absence of law. There was no legal or law structure. So the absence of law would typically be the definition of lawlessness. And yet the media syndicate, before I get into some World Bank and Bank for International Settlement matters, the media syndicate, including Rolling Stone magazine and all these half-wits, would say Joe Arpaio, you know, running a lawless Maricopa County. Well, lawlessness is the absence of any law or any lawman. And Joe Arpaio was, in fact, the exact opposite. He brought law and order to that county and instituted it effectively in terms of getting the job done and cost-effectively in terms of saving the taxpayers tens of millions of dollars. So you see how the media completely inverts things. Law and order is finally happening. Not a mass shooting. Yeah. No shootings on Joe's watch in a church or school. And then they call that lawlessness when, in fact, he got rid of the lawlessness.
I think the point they try to make is that enforcing the law is mean. You don't want to be mean and go down there and enforce law. That's mean. That people are trying to come in here. They want to work. They want to be good people, and they want to just make a little money and make a living, have a better life. And you're just being mean, not letting them come in. And I mean, it's an absurd kind of argument. But and obviously, even saying he saved the taxpayers' money, a lot of people would look at that and say, well, that's just crude, man. It's all just about tax money. That's all it's about, just tax money, saving the taxpayers' money. Well, if you take all the hordes, the multitude of hordes into your country, that will swamp your ability to even raise your own kids, much less their kids and them. So, yes, tax money is important.
Well, the thing is he took an oath as sheriff to enforce the law and do it fairly and constitutionally. So he lawfully enforced the law in harmony with the Constitution, in harmony with his mandate as the sheriff of Maricopa County, Arizona. And he did it fair and square. And he lived in Mexico. He loves the Mexican people. That is a quote directly from him. He loves the Mexican people. But he expects Mexico to be a nation, to behave itself, and to act like a nation state, and to be responsible for its own people, and not just let people traipse through there in the way of the United States, to grow up and act like grown-ups. And the same thing with Guatemala and Honduras. Things can be worked out. He's concerned that many of our diplomats are just opportunists. One of the diplomats to Turkey, where across the seas, where Joe used to work in his younger days as a federal DEA agent, carrying out very dangerous missions, including being involved in the Real French Connection that later became a movie with Gene Hackman. Joe recalled that the government's there. You know, he dealt with some very dangerous things, and so moving it over to Mexico. He dealt with that government in the early 1970s, and they cooperated with him in the effective way that I mentioned. Well, here's where I was going with that. The former U.S. Congressman Jeff Flake, whose last name is more appropriate than even he realizes, Jeff Flake, he was a Arizona congressman in the U.S. House. He is now the U.S. ambassador to Turkey, of all places. And Joe was reasoning that if that's the kind of caliber that we have in our foreign service, then maybe we're expecting too much if we expect the foreign service to do their job as part of the overall picture and go into these countries of origin of all these people claiming asylum and say, why are tens of thousands of people leaving Guatemala? Why are they doing it in El Salvador, Honduras? You, the government of these nations, are responsible for this. But Joe was very skeptical that we have the kind of diplomats hired to do the job and find out answers to these questions and to nip this in the bud at the source, as he would do if he were still in public office and hadn't been forced out by the mass media cartel and the Obama administration wanting to get back at him for the birth certificate probe. But so the situation is such where all the solutions are right at our fingertips, and you would deal with people very humanely. As you know, like I said, Joe loves the Mexican people. He lived there for years. He worked with the Mexican government, which now basically ridicules him or ignores him. They used to work with him much more cooperatively back in the 1970s, right after he got there from Turkey with the DEA. But so you have a situation where we could easily solve it under Joe's vision. What would Joe do about the border? It might not take care of every single facet of the problem, but it would take care of a lot of it. And this is not what's happening. But you and I, Ron, we're talking off the air, and I'll do a screenshot as we talk. One of the things that has come up talking to some of my contacts who are out in the field actually watching the border right at the Rio Grande River, and I often talk to them as they're watching illegals come over the river, and they're trying to repel and intercede in this human trafficking, in this invasion, and they actually repel the illegals and make them go back across the river. Some of these are people that are watching border ranch land on behalf of the ranch owners, and they're hired to patrol the border. But they're reporting directly to me, so I know exactly what's going on in real time, let's say near Eagle Pass, Texas. And the thing is that the military ought to be out there in these remote areas where these private ranch hands are patrolling this borderland. But the military instead is at the ports of entry with the DPS and with the Border Patrol. And so these wide open spaces along the river are fair game for the traffickers and the cartels. And many have been spotted with night vision cameras, Ron, wearing camo or wearing all black, carrying AK-47s, pistols, night vision gear. These are the people coming over that river into the United States in the remote areas away from the ports of entry where all the women and children are. So the Joe Arpaios of the world would have posse and sheriff units arrest and detain these armed intruders immediately. And we have to wonder why Greg Abbott is not actually doing anything about it that we know of. But that being said, one of the things that came up talking to these people out in the field is that the federales, the Border Patrol and ICE and whatnot, get very perturbed if average Americans begin to talk to the illegal aliens, the illegal entrants. Because if you talk to them, you might compare notes. And if you compare notes, you might find that we have a common enemy too. And I see we have a caller from Colorado. But that common enemy is the banking cartel, the banking fraternity. And you and I were talking about that, Ron. You know, I'm packing a lot into this perspective, but wouldn't it be nice if that those coming across the border illegally and United States citizens could actually compare notes and talk about what's really going on? This man here, this should be visible on the screen for the video viewers. He doesn't exactly look like he's missed a meal lately, right, Ron? This is the president of the Bank of Mexico, Augustin Carstens. He also is the current chairman of the board, as I understand it, of the Bank for International Settlements in Switzerland. Wow. So there is a connection between the Bank of Mexico and the central bank of the central banks in Switzerland, the Bank for International Settlements. And this is where the rubber meets the road. This is the entity where we've learned, Ron, that in a very clandestine fashion and in a very advantageous and exploitative fashion, controls the basic mechanics, especially the economic ones, of individual nation states. As each country, including this Bank of Mexico guy, has in effect a delegate to the Bank for International Settlements in Switzerland. So the migrants being pushed around, people being redistributed around the Western Hemisphere, I think it's fair to say is done with the connivance of bankers like this gentleman here.
And I think I've seen this guy before, Mark. Wasn't he in a movie, Despicable Me? I think he's the banker that funds the machine to shrink the moon.
It could be. It's funny how art imitates life or the other way around. But all the nation states have basically given the keys to the kingdom, have given them to the central banks, who are then members of this Bank for International Settlements, again, the central bank of the central banks. And wouldn't it be nice if we could get large numbers of the illegal aliens in a stadium where people like you and I could speak and we could all talk about who the real enemy is? And I'll invite your thoughts, Ron, and then we'll take the caller.
Yeah, well, I don't have any additional thoughts, so we might as well take the caller.
Okay, if I understand it right, we have John from Colorado as the first caller.
I think that's right.
Hey, Ron.
John, are you there still?
Yeah, how you doing?
Hi, thanks for calling.
Yeah, Mark, I like, I got on this kind of late, but I heard you talk about Joe Pio and what he's done and what he still can do, even though he's, you know, he's in his late 80s and all that, and all the harassment they keep giving him because he's telling the truth. But you think about all these, and I've been reading American Free Press in the spotlight since the 70s, and all the stuff they brought on, you don't find anywhere. Nobody reports it, or it's not on TV or anything. And it's, you know, what goes on. You speak of Mexico, you know, I read this through the spotlight way back when. They've been a one-party system since the turn of the 19th century. They have no opposition, and, you know, it's all hushed up. They don't talk about all the power and all that. The people doesn't have anything. Now, things have changed in the last, say, since the 2000s, even before that, since probably the 80s and 90s, where things were a little better. They used to read books about, you know, they're still got about living in Mexico. Americans go down there and live cheaply, and, you know, they love people down there and all that. Maybe so in places you go to, but it's really, you're not sure what's happening today, and then all the stuff about people sneaking across the border. And I like the report, and they talk about the people helping the ranchers, these private security people going down and, you know, not blowing everybody's head off. You know, maybe some cases they need to keep them coming in, take them out, but that, you know, won't help. Same with the Border Patrol, just the last edition of the AFP I met about, you know, it's like the Border Patrol agents are acting as tourists.
Guides,
handing out stuff and all that crap, you know, and, you know, not doing their job, whether they can't or they don't want to, or, you know, you read about somebody speaking to the Association of Border Patrol Agents, unions, or whatever it is, and, you know, trying to help, and they really aren't saying, you know, will they let them do it, or you need to have, like, you know, I had to be guts for the state militias, Governor Abbott, send the militia down, or send the National Guard down and take care of them. The Border Patrol gets in the way, take them out. Anyway, that's just my two cents. So.
Well, yeah, I appreciate what you're saying. The people that talk to me directly from the Rio Grande River, I don't want to use their names much, if at all. They see this every day, you know, platoons of people, often armed, not always armed, coming across the river. They, too, the American guys, are armed. Some of them are ex-Marines, and they have some techniques, and they repel them, and they say, you're not coming in here, you're going back, and there ain't no discussion. And they typically go back. This is what you don't hear about. This is the nitty-gritty stuff down in the weeds you don't hear about. We hear about, Greg Abbott has Operation Lone Star. Well, there's a lot of people that don't have any faith in Governor Abbott. It's just that simple. I'm not saying I do or don't. Maybe it's not for me to say as a reporter, but I'm just hearing a severe, precipitous drop in any faith in Governor Abbott they believe it's largely for show, it's eye candy, quote unquote, and that the fact that people who are wearing camo or black similar outfits with firearms and with night vision goggles are being photographed by cameras that are planted here and there and are not apparently being apprehended. Now, that is a very, very big problem. And for Abbott, we can't say that Abbott doesn't know about that. He would have to know. If he doesn't know, that's bad. If he does know and nothing's being done, that's worse. But either way, it does not look good. And the Sheriff Joes of the world wouldn't tolerate that for one nanosecond. The posse that Sheriff Joe had when he was in there, combined with sheriff's deputies, combined with some soldiers, would immediately at gunpoint apprehend these guys and shake them down and find out what they're doing here and why and who they are. And I'm being told that's not happening. Everybody's going to the ports of entry, which is obvious. That's where the quantities of people are. Women and children, that the media just plays the violins and tugs on the heartstrings and asks us to, simply think of it through an emotional lens and not do any actual law and order work. But well, Mark, I appreciate your comments, though.
Yeah, I want to.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
Thank you, John.
Thank you.
I want to add this, though.
Go ahead.
What they've already started doing this. They've already opened up all these offices,
yes.
Processing offices throughout the Southern Hemisphere. So we're right. Not going to see this anymore, all this bunching up at the border thing. So we're not even going to know that there's a illegal immigration or an immigration problem with just masses of people coming over because we're not going to see them anymore. They're just going to be flown directly into the country at airports. You're just not going to see them bunched up at the borders anymore. And that was their solution. That was making it better solution. The whole idea was just to not have a crowd of people at the border, which I think is absolutely stupid. I think that told us that there's too many people coming in here.
Yeah, let me add to that. I was going to get into that in a sort of oblique angle. One of my border sources said that according to his wife, who speaks Spanish and spoke to some of the illegals coming across different ports of entry, she's actually spoken to them. This is what the powers that be, they don't want us communicating with them because then we learn more nitty gritty what's going on. But now it appears through a little bit of what you said, Ron, some of that will take time to get fully instituted. So there's still some fairly large numbers here and there. But after Title 42, the COVID health reg was dropped, my source told me that rather than more people showing up at the border like they expected, it actually went down. And some of it could be attributable to what you're saying, Ron, but that'll take a little while to be fully instituted. But in the meantime, according to the wife, they're coming across the ports of entry, having made a lot of their paperwork and arrangements via cell phone and via phone call. And then when they get to the ports of entry, they can just on foot, for example, they just let them through. And then the processing has already happened, which, as I understand it, and I do have more to learn, but as I understand it at this point in time, because the pre-arrangements have been made, then they either spend less time with the Border Patrol being processed, or they can maybe bypass that stage altogether, go directly to the NGOs and Catholic charities and different groups, get their itinerary, and more quickly and more efficiently get on a bus or a plane and go somewhere inland. And when I was coming back from meeting Sheriff Joe, I was at the Tucson airport en route to Houston, and some of the Central American people, a group of about seven or eight, including two or three children, were sitting right next to me in the at the gate, getting ready to get on the plane, and I saw their papers, notice to appear, Department of Homeland Security, and they were wearing rather expensive, fresh-looking designer jeans, designer shoes, nice backpacks, nice hats, nice clothes, and I'm not necessarily faulting them for it, but none of them looked like they had missed a meal. None of them looked like they went through any hardship whatsoever, and they were en route to Houston being flown with their papers and, you know, being fast-tracked, apparently. I got some pictures of them I could have shown. I didn't get that up on the screen for today's show. But we do have another caller, and we don't have a lot of time, so we better try and take the call. And this latest call is Rick from Arizona. So let's go ahead and take that call while we have time.
Hello.
Rick, are you there?
Yeah, did you? Am I on?
Yeah, yes, you sure are. How's it going, Rick? Yeah, thanks for calling.
I just want to make the point that the NAFTA Free Trade Agreement over the last 15 years has basically bankrupted all the corn farmers there. That's where the unemployment is coming from, and that's why they're at the border. These people were busted out by cheap subsidized corn from the United States over the, you know, it goes back to 2006. And so I think if you read the Free Trade Agreement real close, a lot of these people have the right to come here. It's that simple. Thanks for taking the call.
I appreciate the call. I might argue with the right to come here, but certainly they have an incentive to come here. If, in fact, what you're saying is true, and I know NAFTA was very destructive of the U.S. manufacturing base, and I call it the SHAFTA agreement, and it didn't just shaft America, it shafted anyone who was party to it, and that would include, you're correct, Mexico. Again, I wouldn't say necessarily they're right, but certainly it explains why they came here, even if it doesn't excuse it necessarily. And, desperate times require desperate measures, that's true. And there's much that could be unpacked, but we don't really have time today. But at any rate, the Mexican government, of course, should be working with the U.S. to mitigate these post-NAFTA things. And NAFTA technically is no longer in service, and now we have this agreement that Donald Trump put into place. I don't know enough details about that agreement to see whether it solves some of those problems that you addressed, Rick. That's another discussion for another time. We'd have to look that up. But I appreciate your input. Anyway, Ron, any parting comments?
Yeah, I think that's interesting. I wouldn't think that that the NAFTA agreement actually had a provision in it that says if your corn crop fails under this agreement, you have a right to enter the United States at the border anytime and become a citizen. Hopefully that's not what Rick meant.
I think he had
some kind of a moral right to do that.
Well, I think he meant that the agreement completely undermined the entire corn industry there. I'd have to look it up for details. NAFTA was a complex and very largely destructive agreement. I'm glad it's gone, but I'm just not sure what replaced it. In as much as I have more faith in Donald Trump maybe than the average person, I don't know if what replaced it is all that good or not. There hasn't been a whole lot of time necessarily to find out. But that's the end of the show today. Thanks for listening, everybody. Thanks to the callers. Thanks, Ron. We'll see everybody next time. Ron does his Search for Lawful Government Tuesdays and Thursdays. He may be live tomorrow. We'll find out. But everybody have a great day, and we'll see you next time. Stay tuned for the next show here on RBN. Stay free.
To prepare and stockpile food, but the one thing out of reach for many is an underground bunker. Until now, because you can now have a 3D printed underground bunker in just one day. An excavator digs a hole in your backyard, and 3dbunkers.com shows up in a small truck and sets up their 3D printer under a tent completely undetected. They can print as many rooms as you want at a fraction of the cost compared to traditional metal bunkers. 3D Bunkers uses polymer concrete, which is 5 times stronger than regular cement. YouTube 3dbunkers.com and watch the video. The creators of 3D Bunkers is looking for a business partner that can help bring this technology to the world. And we need to protect our way of life without living in fear. Contact Brad at 3dbunkers.com for more details or visit 3dbunkers.com.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.